From 104.5 The Zone, this is the Midday 180 queued up by Edley's Barbecue. With Jonathan Hutton, Chad Withrow, and Paul Kuharski.
Welcome into the 11 o'clock hour of the Midday 180, queued up by Edley's Barbecue on 104.5 The Zone. Edley's Barbecue, authentically Nashville, locally owned, two locations open, 12 South and Sylvan Park, and about to open is their East Nashville, or reopen, I should say, their East Nashville location, and they are hiring right now. Edley'sBBQ.com/jobs, if you're interested, Edley'sBBQ.com/jobs. Every Friday on the show, we're joined by Clay Travis. He is presented by TheHomeLoanExpert.com. Clay joining us from his luxury condominium on the beach or beach adjacent. It's very nice, however you want to say it. And he is with us right now. Clay, welcome in, man. How are you?
Good. This is the third Friday in a row at the beach. So I am enjoying it down here.
Clay, I want to start with this. I know you've recently made some hires at Outkick the Coverage. And I'm enjoying some of the different coverage on the site with these hires. But kind of a big picture philosophy question for you. I feel like everything you've done with that site has been strategically in your voice and with what you want to do with it. And we haven't heard or seen from a lot of different people and voices or read different people on your site. So when you make the decision to expand like that, how much are you looking for people to hire that fit in your mold, or are you looking for people that may be a little bit different from you to add to it? How do you go about that?
Yeah, I think it's just a broad question in general. And I've said from the moment I started Outkick, I want people who are smart, original, funny, and authentic. Because I think those are, if you're trying to figure out what works, right? If you want to sum up what works, I think smart, original, funny, and authentic. So I'm not saying that people have to be able to do all four of those in every different article, but I think that's kind of the ethos, if you want to use, of what I try to do with Outkick. So I want smart, I want original, I want funny, and I want authentic. It could be some people are just really super funny, but they're not necessarily doing that much other things outside of that. If they're really good at that, that would be somebody that I would want to hire. It could be somebody who's super smart, right, at data and analytics, and they never write anything remotely funny. It sounds kind of ridiculous, I guess, but it's a little bit like Potter Stewart, the Supreme Court Justice, said, I know it when I see it. I can read a paragraph pretty much from people and be like, okay, this guy makes sense, or they don't, right? And really, the other thing is work ethic. There's a lot of people who are, they can write one good thing a week or they can write one good thing a month. They're not going to work that hard. I've got to have people who are going to work hard every day. And so I work hard every day. So I'm not expecting everybody else to have the same work ethic that I do. I understand that I work harder than most people. That's why I've been successful. I really do believe that. But I do need people who are not going to rest on their laurels. I don't want employees who are going to be slackers. And so it was time. Look, it was the right time to decide to expand. And I'm excited about the new people we've got now and the new people we're going to have in the weeks and months ahead.
Want to ask a couple questions about The Last Dance. We were talking this week amongst ourselves about to what degree it qualifies as a puff piece. I think there's some key things obviously left out. Jerry Krause, the one biggest thing to me, they paint Jerry Krause as the guy that Reinsdorf went from the White Sox and just grabbed him over. He had no basketball experience. He actually worked for the Baltimore Bullets previously and had some success over there. Obviously, he's a villain in the way he wanted credit, in the way that he was determined to break up the team after 98. But Jordan hated him. They all hated him. They had reason to hate him. But he also assembled a pretty damn good team. He's the guy that found Pippen. He's the guy that went and got Rodman. He's the guy that found all these pieces. He's the guy that got Kukoc. What do you think about the way he's portrayed here so freely as a villain and the way his story's told inside of this?
It's a good question. I think it's unfair. I think it's particularly unfair because he's dead and he can't speak for himself. And I know they can go back into archival footage and try to have him talk, but it strikes me as unfair when you make an overall villain And let's be, to be fair, Jerry Krause was more of the villain in the first couple of episodes than he has been since. I mean, he's kind of loomed as a villain, but he's an easy villain, right? He's not particularly good looking. He's short. He's nerdy. He's not blessed athletically with good looks like Michael Jordan was, athleticism and good looks. He's sort of the nebbish, easy to paint as a villain. And I think you're right. I mean, we're not spending enough time talking about his decision to trade up and get Scottie Pippen or to find Horace Grant as well. I think he's a second round pick or wherever he got Horace Grant. The fact that Steve Kerr and John Paxson fit well in what was being done to supplement Michael Jordan, the addition of Dennis Rodman, that the decision to give Phil Jackson his coaching job in the first place. There are lots of reasons why the Chicago Bulls ended up being the dynasty that they did, and many of them, maybe even most of them, have to do with Michael Jordan's supreme excellence. But Jordan didn't do it by himself, and I think Jerry Krause was a big part of why they were able to have success.
Bulb disappearance. I'm not a conspiracy theory guy. If there was some big suspension there or something 30 years later, we'd know about it. No way do people stay quiet that long on something that big. But it sure is weird. You watch it. Also, people are telling us how him hitting 200 was such a great accomplishment. He sucked. What do you make of his decision or the circumstances that prompted him to leave basketball at that stage? A lot of people are stressed out. A lot of people carry good teams to good fortunes and find a way to re-energize their gas tank. I know his father's murder complicated things, but it's such an odd decision then and now.
I agree. I still think that it, and I'm not a conspiracy guy by and large, but I still think it's possible. I mean, you guys look this up, and I haven't had the time to look it up myself. But didn't Jerry Reinsdorf continue to pay Michael Jordan the same amount that he would have paid him to play basketball, to play baseball instead?
Like that.
Look that up, even after I'm off the show later. That seems really strange to me in and of itself. If you're Jerry Reinsdorf, I understand you want to try to keep Michael Jordan happy, but Jerry Reinsdorf owned the Chicago White Sox as well, which is theoretically how Jordan ended up playing for the White Sox. And you might just say, well, that was a good investment for Jerry Reinsdorf to keep Michael Jordan on the payroll. But I don't remember ever seeing an examination of the contract that he signed to play minor league baseball. And so I wonder about that in general. I do think that if David Stern said he had Jerry Reinsdorf and Michael Jordan and those are the only two guys that are in the room, and he said, I'm suspending you for 18 months. And I will forever deny that I'm doing this. I never want anybody outside of the three people in this room right now who need to know it to be aware of this. But that's what's going on. Here's what I've uncovered. And as a result, boom. Now, there are certainly arguments that cut against that. One, the primary one would be from a pure business perspective, that would be lunacy for David Stern to do, because Michael Jordan made NBA franchises and NBA basketball in general relevant at a time when it hadn't been relevant before. But I still think it's super weird. And sometimes super weird things happen. You know, I was a kid and I got to go watch Michael Jordan play baseball in Nashville, sitting in the right field bleachers. I know Withrow said, we tweeted about this or texted about it. I can't remember which one, but I know Withrow went to some of those games when he was a kid growing up too as well. And they were electric. I mean, it was like a World Series game in Nashville when Michael Jordan came to play baseball. And it is certainly a strange and weird story. But there are a lot of strange and weird stories surrounding the Chicago Bulls dynasty. And I suspect a lot of strange and weird stories surrounding most sports franchises in general, which never see the light of day because they're able to keep them quiet.
We're going to get into the California State College System's decision to not bring students back this fall and what that could mean for college sports in the state, especially if the university system decides as well. We'll do that next. But first, Clay, tell us about the Home Loan Expert.
Look, I mean, 36 million people have lost jobs. That's one in every five, over one in every five people, I think, right now. A lot of people have taken pay cuts, a lot of people furloughed, a lot of different economic struggles that are going on right now in the country. One positive is that mortgage rates have never been lower, 15 and 30-year rates. So if you are trying to put your financial house in order, you're trying to save hundreds or thousands of dollars, now is the time to refi or take out a brand new mortgage. Get hooked up now. It can take as little as 5 minutes, thehomeloanexpert.com, and you can be well on your way to saving an absolute bundle at thehomeloanexpert.com.
As your workday winds down, dive into sports with the 3HL. Powered by the Tennessee Lottery. Weekdays 2 till 6 on 104.5 The Zone.
Welcome back. It's the Midday 180, queued up by Edley's Barbecue, authentically Nashville, locally owned. Edley's Barbecue, two locations open now, 12 South and Sylvan Park. Their East Nashville location reopening, and they are hiring for their East Nashville location, edleysbarbecue.com/jobs. Clay Travis joins us every Friday from 11 to 11:30, presented by the Home Loan Expert. Clay, big decision coming down from California State University System, 23 schools that will not be coming back to campus this fall, which is bad news for programs like San Diego State, Fresno State, San Jose State in terms of a football season. What does this decision signify, and what could the implications be, especially if the University of California system decides next that they're not going to come back to campus, affecting the Pac-12 and UCLA and Cal?
Well, I think it's a mess. And I think what it speaks to is the challenges that will come as a variety of different states make decisions as we come through the fall. And I think it's the state of California. If I were predicting right now, I think the NFL teams and the NBA teams in the state of California, barring some sort of substantial change, are going to have to go play elsewhere. And you've already started to hear some of those whispers and suggestions. That's easier to do with a pro sports franchise than certainly it is with a college campus, with kids that are on a college campus. But to me, I look at individual college football conferences. And for instance, I would be stunned beyond belief if the SEC doesn't play based on all the conversations that I've had. And in fact, I think SEC athletes are likely to be back on campus in June. And people say, well, why do you believe that? And I'll give you an example, because probably people who care about college football the most, obviously in Nashville, it's the SEC. Well, it's because gyms are opening up. And it's hard for me to understand, logically, if every state in the SEC is likely by June 1 to have gyms that are open and you can go work out in that gym wherever you are across the SEC footprint, how would you not then be able to say, okay, these kids can also go use the gyms and athletic facilities on a college campus, right? In other words, if you're in Nashville right now and you are a scholarship athlete at an SEC school, if you can walk into, I don't know, what's the biggest, Lifetime Fitness or whatever it is, whatever the biggest fitness center, YMCA, whatever they are, if by June you're going to be able to go in, and I think you're going to be able to, you guys may be able to speak to Davidson County better than I can, but I know in Franklin and in Williamson County, you can go into the gyms now all over, you know, the Nashville area. I think the same thing is true in Sumner County, everywhere outside of Davidson. Davidson might not have opened up gyms yet, but by June they will have. And so every SEC school, I believe, is going to have their kids, their athletes, back on campus by June. And I think they're going to be in school for the fall and everything else. But the same thing might not be true in California. And where it really gets complicated is, let's say, for instance, Alabama is set to play USC in the first week of the season, which they are. When is USC and when are their athletes going to be able to get back into a campus environment, get back into shape, and get ready for the season, compared to when Alabama athletes are, for instance? Alabama's better than USC already, but that would seem to offer an even more substantial issue there going forward than it already does. And look, and the SEC is relatively lucky. I think the Big 12 is as well, because all of their states pretty much are having the same results So there's not a major competitive difference. But think about, let's say, the ACC, where Clemson and Florida State in South Carolina and in Florida may well be ready to go back to campus in the very short term reality. But there's a huge number of people out there in, let's say, Syracuse, New York, and Boston College, and maybe Pittsburgh as well, you know, the Northeast, where that might not be the case. So I think these speak to many of the challenges that could be growing. And look, Arizona is open. It's a state that borders California. Not only are they open, they're saying Major League Sports can begin to play there starting tomorrow. And California is saying they may not allow Major League Sports to happen until 2022, depending on who you talk to. So that is a challenge that exists for the Pac-12 and the ACC that may not exist for the SEC and the Big 12.
Well, Clay, in unintended consequences with a decision like this, and here's an example. So Fresno State, San Jose State, San Diego State can't play football. So players that are at those schools on a football scholarship, if they want to go and play football, what's to stop other programs from coming in and cherry-picking those guys, and then the NCAA having to make some decision on immediate eligibility for those players? Then you've got another mess on your hands with guys wanting to transfer out of state just so they can have a football season and play.
Not only that, look, I think those three schools that you just mentioned that are in the Mountain West are, according to articles I've read, planning on playing and using loopholes about what exactly constitutes students on campus. For instance, there are certain things that you can't do remotely as students on the campus. So if there are any students attending class on campus, those schools are going to use that as a reason why their student athletes can continue to play. But I think the larger context in which you are asking questions is a good one. And look, I don't even think it's just athletes. If you are, let's say, a wealthy person in California and your kids are finishing their senior year and they're going to college, let's say you have a son or daughter who was admitted to Northwestern, Vanderbilt, Duke, and Southern Cal. Why in the world would you have them enroll at Southern Cal right now when there's a decent chance that they may have to do remote computer learning and you might be paying $70,000 a year for your son or daughter to sit in front of a computer and to do testing and schoolwork that way, when there are equally elite academic institutions like Northwestern, Duke, and Vanderbilt that I just talked about, where you could travel to easily, or you know, you could be going to Stanford or whatever it is. If I were a person, and it, by the way, it's not just people who live in California. There are probably some people in Nashville who have these decisions, kids who applied and got into UCLA or Stanford or USC. Why in the world would you leave the South in Nashville right now to go to a California school for your freshman year when they might require you to study remotely, when if you're capable of getting into great schools like UCLA, Stanford, or USC, there are probably a ton of other options that you have out there where you feel more comfortable with the fact that the school is going to be back in session and you'll have a traditional freshman year. My kids are too young to be in these situations, but that's something that certainly I can imagine having to decide for many people out there as it comes to the college admission season. And I think referencing the difficulty there, most schools have extended. Usually there's a May 1st acceptance deadline. Most schools have pushed back to June 1 to try to give people an opportunity to kind of have more clarity about what they're doing. But I'm just saying, as a parent right now, I wouldn't allow my kid to accept an admission even to a great California school right now. I would tell them to go to another state. And that then becomes a major issue for those California schools because they rely upon having a certain number of freshmen in their enrollment class. And I would imagine the number of people that are going to be coming out of state to Stanford and USC will be a lot lower than it has been in past years.
Clay Travis of Outkick the Coverage in his weekly visit with us. Is there a liability issue for these schools if a football player comes back, gets COVID, gets sick, or even dies? How much is that, you think, in play for some of the places who are being super careful or in California where they're going to the far extreme?
I think we need, and this is just general proposition, a federal law to say that you can't sue a school if a kid gets sick from a virus on campus. And I say that, I mean, look, if you look at the data, and I try to focus on the data reflects that you are much more likely as a young person to die of the flu on a college campus than you are to die of this virus. I don't believe that there would have been an ability to have a successful lawsuit over someone dying of the flu on a college campus. So I think what needs to happen, and I know they're talking about this on a federal level, is there needs to be some form of protection. And by the way, I don't just think this is for a college campus. Let's talk about the Titans or the Nashville Predators in Nashville. If they decide to open back up and they allow people to go into the stadium, I think the idea that you are able to sue because you get the coronavirus, you believe, watching the Titans play a football game or the Predators play a football game or Vanderbilt play a football game should not be allowed. Right, I think we all assume a certain level of risk when we go out into the larger public. If you are afraid of that, you certainly have a right. I'm talking about if there are fans at the stadiums, not to go to those games. But I think there are a couple of challenges with it. One, and the same thing would apply for the college kid. How do you know the college kid got the coronavirus on campus and not off campus at a bar or restaurant or gas station, for that matter, in the area surrounding that campus? It's almost impossible to prove exactly where you got a virus. And the same thing would hold true if you go to a Titans game on Sunday and 10 days later you get sick. It's highly unlikely that the only public venue you attended was a Tennessee Titans game. So being able to say, hey, I got the coronavirus from this specific event at this specific point in time is nearly impossible to do. So speaking from a legal perspective as a lawyer, I don't think it's going to be very productive as a society to allow lawsuits like that to be filed. I would suggest that we need some form of protection to avoid plaintiff's lawyers, frankly, overloading our court systems with completely spurious lawsuits that are designed to just make it more difficult for society to get back to normal.
Clay Travis, Outkick the Coverage, joins us every Friday on the show, presented by The Home Loan Expert, thehomeloanexpert.com. Clay, thanks so much, man. Talk to you again next week.
Hey, appreciate y'all having me. Thanks a lot.
13 of the 14 SEC athletic directors agreed to bring students and coaches back on campus on June 1st. There was one dissenting opinion. You may not be able to believe who the one dissenting opinion was on that. We'll explain. That's next. It's the Midday 180, queued up by Edley's Barbecue.
The Zone thanks all first responders and their efforts towards the COVID-19 pandemic.
I want to thank all the nurses and doctors out there in hospitals around the country.
You're the real MVPs.
You know, leave their family in their house while they going weeks and weeks trying to help us and keep us safe. That's amazing.
104.5, The Zone. The Zone. The Zone.
Welcome back to the Midday 180, queued up by Edley's Barbecue on 104.5 The Zone. Edley's Barbecue, authentically Nashville, locally owned. Two locations open now, 12 South and Sylvan Park. East Nashville location about to open back up, and they are hiring at Edley's Barbecue. EdleysBBQ.com/jobs for more information. Chad Withrow, Paul Kuharski with you. Story coming down from Kentucky Sports Radio, our friends at Kentucky Sports Radio. Matt Jones's operation. And the story goes like this. The presidents and chancellors of the 14 SEC universities will vote on whether or not to lift the league-wide ban on team activities 1 week from today. But Kentucky Sports Radio is hearing that there is some dissent among SEC athletic directors on when players should return to campus to begin training for the football season. Sources tell KSR that SEC ADs met virtually on Wednesday to discuss lifting restrictions on team activities, practices, and other organized gatherings, which currently run through May 31st. vast majority of ADs supported allowing players to return to campuses on June 1st. However, one athletic director spoke out against it. That athletic director, Tennessee's Phil Fulmer. After discussing it with the group, Fulmer proposed the date of June 15th, but many believed that was too late for players to be ready to start the season on schedule. From there, the discussion was tabled for next week. The final decision will be up to university presidents and chancellors on May 22nd. But the league's ADs want to present a unified front to the presidents on when to return. Had Fulmer not spoken up, the assumption is the group would have given the presidents a unanimous recommendation to lift the restrictions to allow players to return to campuses June 1st. Now, I'll say I'm surprised that Philip Fulmer is the one AD that doesn't want to return to campus on June 1st and wants to back it up to June 15th. That's a bit of a surprise to me. Paul, I also, when it comes to 14 days, I don't understand how the response then from the ADs is, well, we can't get ready for a football season on June 15th, and we can't get ready for fall sports if they return then. I don't know that there's a huge difference between returning to campus on June 1st and June 15th if that's what Philip Fulmer wants to do. If you said return on August 1st, yeah, that's a big difference than returning to campus to start working out and have team gatherings on June 1st or June 15th. Not a huge difference there.
2 weeks. I mean, initially when you saw the headline, it seemed, the headline doesn't give any specifics about the timetable, but timetable wise, it doesn't seem like that big a deal. When, you know, first indication on this, I'm thinking, oh God, here come the pitchforks and the torches for Philip. This is not that big a deal that he's asking for two additional weeks, I don't think. And, you know, the idea that these 2 weeks are going to kill football programs getting ready is this overzealous thing. You know, 2 weeks, anybody can get over 2 weeks at this early stage of things. So I'd like to hear more about his rationale and what everybody else said. And I imagine some more of that will come out as some of the bigger reporters, not that Mrs. Tyler Thompson is not a big reporter, though this is the first I've heard from her. That's an odd byline. I might change my byline to Mr. Paul Kuharsky. But I look forward to hearing more about it and about the rationale. And he's a well-thought-out guy, and I want to hear his thoughts.
I think that Philip Fulmer is positioning himself and wants to be a leader amongst athletic directors in the SEC. So one way you do that is you take a different stance than the rest of the conference and don't just go along with everyone just to go along. So maybe that's part of it with this also. And on the flip side of that, Paul, I'm with you. I don't know why the ADs said we can't get ready for a season on June 15th. We got to be there on June 1st. I think the flip side of the argument would be, hey, Phil, we're talking about 2 weeks here also. I don't know that 2 weeks is going to eradicate every possible issue that we may run into. So how about going along with us here on June 1st? Because 2 weeks isn't going to make a big difference.
Well,
that
I think
way
you can either. Argue that on either side.
Right. That's the point, is he's saying 2 weeks isn't going to be a big difference. Maybe he's hearing from his doctors and people that it will, and we should be extra careful and just back it up or say. Actually, the first line said he was proposing an indefinite return, but then started talking about the possibility of backing up to June 15th and not June 1st. Anyway, interesting story that of all the SEC athletic directors, the one dissenting opinion on returning to sports and activities on campus on June 1st is Philip Fulmer of Tennessee. So that's a story to follow. They've tabled the discussion, and they're trying to present a unified front to the school presidents to present to them. Then the presidents will be the ultimate decision makers. They want to get a consensus from the ADs, but once they present that plan to the presidents will then have to vote on it to move forward. And keep in mind, I believe the two schools right now that still have made no decision or announced one on coming back to campus this fall are Vanderbilt and Kentucky. So those are two programs to watch in terms of what happened in California also. So anyway, fascinating story. I'm with you, Paul. Kentucky Sports Radio has broken news before. But we'll see who else picks it up. I know College Football Talk, which curates all this stuff, like Pro Football Talk, has run the story as well. But interesting that Philip Fulmer was the one AD against returning to campus on June 1st. I'm interested to hear the response from Tennessee fans on that, because I get a sense that most Tennessee fans would be in favor of returning June 1st, and their athletic director is the one guy saying, nope, we still need to wait on all this stuff. So we'll see what the response is to that. Something happened in the Wake Up Zone this morning. Blew my mind a little bit.
They
had Mike Keith on, and they asked Mike Keith about John McClain's statement on our show. I believe it was last week, right, Paul?
It was Tuesday.
Yeah, sorry. The weeks are all run together now. We've been at this for so long, not in studio. On Tuesday, John McClain said in just a passing statement on the Midday 180, when we were talking about our historical look at the Titans name and brand unveiling, that Bud Adams was going to name the team Pioneers. It was absolutely done. And then it got leaked in Memphis, and he decided to change the name of the Titans once it got leaked in Memphis. Mike Keith was asked about that on this morning's Wake Up Zone. We will play that answer for you next and discuss. It's the Midday 180, queued up by Edley's Barbecue.
No matter when and how the NFL season is played, you'll get every Titans game on your official home of the Tennessee Titans. 104.5 The Zone.
It's the Midday 180, queued up by Edley's Barbecue on 104.5 The Zone. Chad Withrow, Paul Kuharsky with you on this Friday. David Reed, our producer, chairman of the board. And earlier this week, we were joined by John McClain. And this was after we had our Nashville Sports Retrospective, where we took a deeper look at the first uniform unveiling for the Titans. We talked with Craig Hentrick. We talked with former Executive Vice President Don McLaughlin about that day. And then we asked John McClain to share some of his recollection of that time. And just in a passing comment, and John McClain tells us thousands of stories over the years, in his years in the NFL. One that I had never heard that John said, and we'll ask him more about it later today, but he said in passing, and Paul, I know it kind of got both of our attention, that Bud Adams was going to name the team the Tennessee Pioneers until the story leaked somewhere in Memphis, and he decided to change course and call them the Tennessee Titans. We tweeted out that quote, and everyone said, boy, dodged a bullet on that one, that it's not the Pioneers. The Titans, far superior to the team being called the Tennessee Pioneers. So, Paul, I know after that you expressed some skepticism in John's story.
My skepticism came out of my failure to remember, because it didn't ring the slightest bell for me. But apparently that's a memory issue for me based on what you're about to share with us from this morning.
So Mike Keith, voice of the Titans, joined the Wake Up Zone this morning, and Mark Howard, I believe, asked him about that quote from John McClain and that story, and here is what Mike Keith had to say.
I'll say this. I can't really get into all of it, but I'll say this. Mr. Adams really liked the name Pioneers. Not many other people did. I think the Pioneers thing was something that he really saw as a strong possibility. I don't think that was the league's opinion at any point. At that time, I think Pioneers and Volunteers was way too close, and it still is.
I was blown away when I heard that from Mike Keith. Not that I was doubting John McClain.
Well, he said really liked. He didn't say, he wasn't as strong as John there.
Paul, that is as strong as an endorsement of what John McClain said as you're going to get out of Mike Keith, Titans employee, when he says, let's just say Bud Adams really liked it and no one else in the league included really didn't like it. Remember Don McLaughlin also telling us his meeting with Doug Dickey at the time. Doug Dickey said, you can call the team whatever you want, just no orange in the uniform or in the logo at all, no Tennessee orange. And then you have Mike Keith saying that the name Pioneers was way too close to Volunteers when they're trying to brand the Tennessee NFL team. I was blown away hearing that, and it's something that we didn't spend a lot of time on after John said it on air other than the Twitter response to it, but I'll echo what most of our listeners and followers on social media said to that quote, and that is, Titans dodged a huge bullet, because I can think of about 1,000 better NFL team nicknames than the Pioneers.
If you're picking a name around the turn of the century, in terms of it having any punch to it. Pioneers is just incredibly lacking. There's no verve to it whatsoever. And I don't know that Titans was an incredible home run there. The alliteration, I think people automatically are drawn to, but just visualize Pioneers. I mean, what was it going to be? A covered wagon as the logo? I mean, that
is it Davy
really
Crockett, like the Tennessee logo? That's what I was thinking. You're trying to go with that type of pioneer. You're going to have Daniel Boone on the logo. How do you work that? Exactly.
And I think we lose here. I mean, I think it would have been Cherokees if he could have done anything he wanted from the start. They squashed that immediately. Bud Adams was a huge Native American history guy. I think he had some Cherokee in him. I had been to his office a couple times in Houston where he had pretty much a museum that he was very proud to show off. And I think the league scoffed at that one immediately and just said no. Otherwise, I think that would have been a slam dunk for him. And I don't know that that would have gone a lot of great directions either in terms of logo and symbolism and all of that. So really, I think we probably dodged two bullets in terms of bad nickname choices. And then ultimately, I told you I had a little conversation with Amy, the nostalgia for the old AFL drew him in large part to the Titans, which apparently was third choice.
Well, and it's an interesting conversation to have, and certainly with the color scheme with the Titans, it's better than we don't know what the color scheme would have been. I guess the same with the Pioneers, but a better name. Also interested, Paul, in what we talked about with Don McLaughlin, that initial relationship with the Tennessee Titans and the University of Tennessee, and trying to gain the Tennessee Vols fan while also that delicate dance of not stepping on toes when everyone knew. And I know Tennessee at the time and Doug Dickey and administration there, they were fearful that an NFL team in the state would hurt them. You know, people might decide to stay home in Nashville and not go to Knoxville for the day and go to the NFL game on Sunday instead. And then looking at that now years and years later, and how I think the separation of those two brands is great, right? I don't see a lot of blending of anything with the Tennessee Titans. When I hear Titans, I think Titans NFL. When I hear Tennessee, I think Vols. And the separation between the two, and the fact you have so many fans of other college football programs that are Titans fans also, and it's not just some collection of all Tennessee Vols fans are also Titans fans. And I think the Peyton Manning in the division probably had a good bit to do with that split, where a lot of Tennessee fans that may have been Titans fans went with the Colts once Peyton went to the Colts. I think all of that has led to a good separation of brands between those two. Would you agree?
Yeah. I mean, by the time I got here, it was a done deal, and I didn't sense much Vol fan resent for the whole idea. I'm curious, and maybe David has some thoughts on this too, about what Vols fans thought as it was coming to fruition, if they felt like an NFL team was going to infringe on their beloved Vols, or if they were smart enough to see the difference in the room and the good for football in general, or if they felt like they were getting encroached on from Saturday, from Sunday creeping into Saturday somehow.
So I can only speak for myself. I started watching when it was pretty evident that a move was going to happen. I started watching probably the last half of the last season in Houston and really developed an affection for that team and the way they played. They weren't winning many football games, but they were playing hard. So when it was announced that they were coming to Nashville, there was nothing that was ever going to happen with that team, an NFL team that was going to take away from what had been ingrained in me for, at that time, 19, 20, 21 years of my life, and that love for Tennessee football and the University of Tennessee and the Volunteers. And I think the people that I was around, the football fans that I was around, kind of were the same way. The NFL was something new and fresh, and they were going to give it a chance, and they were going to root for the Titans because that was going to be Nashville and Tennessee's team. But nothing was ever going to supersede their affection and their love and their loyalty to the Tennessee Vols.
I think it's the same way today for most of those fans. Reed, I will say, I think at the time there was more of a problem from Tennessee fans about the encroachment of the name Tennessee given to the team with the Titans. And I think years later, that's cooled big time. You're still going to find a segment of the Tennessee Vols fan base that would much prefer them be the Nashville Titans and not use the name Tennessee in their name. But I think that percentage is much smaller than it was back in the late 90s.
That never crossed my mind until someone brought it up a decade or more later. Like, it was never something that was top of mind to me. I never was going to equate the two.
Yeah, Chad's a little big on this. You do know it's the name of the state, right? Before it's the name of the university.
Yes, but it was the name of the university's football team, too. And I'm just going by word association. When I say Tennessee, I think a majority of Tennesseans that are from here would think Tennessee Vols. When you say Titans, it's totally different. The only time I think about it, honestly, Paul, is when I hear a national – local media doesn't use Tennessee. They use Titans when describing the team. But when a national person says, oh, they go to Tennessee this week, or that's who Tennessee drafted, that's the only time that my mind immediately thinks, well, that's the Vols, but I know they're talking about the Titans. And it's not, I'm not confused by it at all. I'm clearly watching an NFL broadcast, but that's the only time I think about it.
So we'll probably need to do this on Monday when Hutton returns. And you made the joke the other day that Hutton may have actually liked the Pioneers because he was a Warren County Pioneers. He knows something about that story, and I can't remember the details of how he got it or when he got it, but he knows further details about the story of Bud Adams, the Tennessee Titans / Tennessee Pioneers. So we'll get that from him on Monday when he returns.
Another reason to look forward to Hutton's return on Monday with that story coming.
Your absence.
Just like that, Paul, we are halfway through the show. When we come back, we will reset things. We'll go through some headlines, including an interesting story told by James Harrison. We'll discuss that next. It is the Midday 180 queued up by Edley's Barbecue.